Welcome back to the International Commission Podcast. Brooke and Bucky are here with you again. On this podcast, we talk about all sorts of things related to working with International Commission or going with us on trips or what our partners around the world do day to day. But we also tell funny stories, talk about our favorite foods or places so you can laugh and learn with us. What are we going to talk about today, Brooke?
Welcome back, everyone. Today, Bucky and I will be doing a segment we've done before called What Even Happens? And today we're going to learn a little bit about our travel days. If you're going on a trip with IC, what you can expect from travel days. Along with that, we'll be covering our top five best foods lists from around the world. And lastly, we will be sharing with you a special national-to-national testimony from our faithful partners around the world. Let's get started, Bucky.
What even happens?
All right, so we're first going to chat about what the heck happens on travel days on our international trips for Evangelism Partnership.
Yep.
If you've never gone with IC before, this will be helpful for you because you'll learn what to expect. After you've done your fundraising, your training, all of the preparation, then it's time to head to the airport and go. You have to pack before that too.
Yes, actually. Ideally.
And then take your stuff to the airport with your passport because you cannot forget that.
If you forget anything, don't forget a passport. If you're going to take anything to the airport, bring the passport.
A lot of other things are replaceable. That is not.
Yeah.
Not easily, anyways. And so you show up at the airport. What happens from that point until you get to your destination country?
So I know from my first trip, it was pretty crazy and hectic because I was asked to leave less than 24 hours before my trip.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty wild. Again, story for another day. But I drove down to Dallas. And so if you are near a bigger city area, then IC might ask you to travel there just to save a little bit on cost. They might not always, but I live in Oklahoma City. Flights were cheaper out of Dallas, and they wanted to give me a few items as well. And so they had asked me to drive down to Dallas because it would just save a few $100s. But wherever you are, I mean, if you're in a small town, of course, you'll have to go to the nearest airport and they'll take care of you. We're going to take care of all of your flights and everything. And so I drove down to Dallas and from there flew to Miami where we would meet the rest of the team. And so usually you're going to have a central location where you're all going to meet up together and then you'll all fly out to the destination together because our goal is to get on the same flight for the bigger flight to the country.
Yep. That's so experienced and new people can all come together and travel together so you can meet each other, start getting to know each other, learn a little bit more about the trip and the schedule and who everybody is, that kind of thing. But also to kind of walk new travelers through the whole process so you're not nervous about that.
Right.
So that central location is usually Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, but sometimes it's not.
Okay. Yep.
Yep.
And a lot of times, this is something you can expect is the red-eye flights, which are flights that leave at night, which is very weird. It's not a weird concept. It honestly, it makes sense and it's cheaper, I think, a lot of times. But going to an airport around 9 p.m. for a flight that leaves at 11 p.m. is a really odd thing because it just disorients your body a lot. But it's a good time. I mean, the goal is, you know, to sleep on it, especially if you arrive in the morning. And so do your best to sleep on the flight. But wherever you're going in the world, there's a chance you're going to be flying at night. Because if you're going across to another continent, you know, on the other hemisphere, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it's a guarantee. If you're flying from the Western hemisphere to the Eastern, you'll be flying at night at some point.
Yes,
for sure.
At some point. Yeah. But yeah, you'll get to meet your team, which is really exciting and a nice time. And you get to especially meet people who may have gone for decades with IC. And they can kind of give you some confidence boosters and encouragement. They always get really excited seeing younger people coming on the trip too. They get really pumped about that. And so, yeah, you'll want to make sure you have your passport. A lot of times you'll have a visa or you'll get a visa in country as well for for me, one country I went to, we had to have a visa beforehand, but that's not necessarily important for the travel day. You'll take care of that beforehand and it'll be with you. But making sure you have information on your prescription medicines, you know, if you need a note from a doctor, just having those hand will be helpful, especially when you're traveling. Let's talk about layovers, because you're going to probably have some layovers.
Yes. And the reason you will probably have a layover is, one, just the time it takes to get somewhere on another continent. It just takes a long time, and planes can only go so far, or airlines only route them to certain hubs. Or, and sometimes you have to transfer from one airline to another that's in their partnering alliance. All sorts of different factors can cause layovers. Another planned reason for a layover may just be price. Like you said, Brooke, we are booking large groups, and we are booking through nonprofit booking agencies that work with IC. And that gives us some advantages on price. Booking as groups sometimes does as well, but it makes it challenging to get a lot of people on the same route at the same time. And so a lot of times that just means it's more efficient to stop, have a layover, and then continue on another leg to keep everybody together and on schedule. But yes, sometimes it's unplanned because of missed flights, delays, weather, strikes. I've had that happen. Been in an airport when the airline decided to strike and you're stuck there, or whatever other reason. And you should always plan for that to be a possibility.
Yes, you should.
If your flight itinerary shows a very short layover of, you know, 2-3 hours, it could be longer if something happens to your connecting flight. If your connection is an hour or less, just go ahead and assume you will miss a flight.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just being pragmatic. So many times that we've had an unexpected longer layover, it's been because our connection was too short. And flying over the ocean takes a really long time, and so many factors can happen. By the time you get there, while you're in the air, you might have a delay that pushed your other flight to, I don't know, a different day, or you just might arrive late, or you might arrive to the tarmac on time, but taxiing to your gate takes too long, and now you've missed your flight. So anyways, just expect it, and don't get upset, and make the most of it. So you can listen to previous episodes about how to make the most of a long layover.
Yes. But check that out.
Usually it works out to be a good thing. God's always in control, of course, and good things can happen on a layover. It's another opportunity to get to know your team better, just to kind of relax, walk around, take advantage of time to stretch your legs and eat something. Maybe if you can get outside, do that.
Yeah.
And then wait for your next flight, because you're just going to sit on another plane again for multiple hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But travel days can be really fun, really exciting, because, you know, you're about to go to your expected destination. On the way home, sometimes they're horrible because you're just ready to be home. They can be long.
The trip home is harder usually, just because you're ready to get home. You've had an amazing week, but you're ready to get home. You're tired. Your body is not used to the environment you've been in. It's exhausting in just a different way than you're used to if you've never traveled internationally before.
Yeah,
that's a part of travel days, of course, is long flights. So I don't remember which episode number it was, but we talked about ways to kill time on a long haul flight.
Yep.
I guess the bullet point version of that would be to try to sleep. Get up and walk around if you can, just a little bit to stay stretched and make the most of it. If you've got someone friendly sitting next to you, especially if it's a team member, just make the most of the flight together, because it is. It's a long trip. And that part of it is not necessarily fun, but you can make the most fun you can from it. Make the most of it. So once you arrive to your first layover, usually the only layover, but sometimes there's multiple connections. Your team usually will gather up and talk about plans for what you're doing next. If it's a close layover, you're going to go directly probably to your new gate and go there all together and either sit and wait for your next flight or set up camp. Someone usually will stay with your baggage or people will take shifts so that you can go and get a meal or explore or whatever else you want to do or need to do. You might have another team meeting there. Once everybody's gotten a little bit of rest, people are kind of more awake, less frantic from getting to the first airport. And this is where you might talk a little bit more about the agenda for the travel day or the trip, the whole week. So you know kind of what to expect when you land. You might get your per diem at that point, if you haven't already, and your coordinator will have all of the money that is designated as the per diem. So a portion of the trip cost that you've paid in, that of course you've raised support for, so you didn't have to pay for it all out of pocket, and you have partners who are joining you on mission financially. Part of that trip cost gets divvied out back to you so that you can use that during the travel day and on the ground as needed. And then one thing people always want to know about is when and where to exchange money. In my experience, that has been different every time, just kind of depending on what the national partners advise. Sometimes it's better to exchange it right when you get to the destination country at the airport. Sometimes it's much more expensive there, or there's corruption there. They'll tell you where the best place is to go and exchange money. So sometimes it might be the day after you get there, even after the opening rally. But just don't worry about that until you get in country. But you'll get some of that money, and your coordinator will advise you on how much you should spend, you know, during transit,
right,
how much you should save for the week itself.
Something else to note is when you arrive in your destination country, that might not be your last bit of travel. You might have to take a bus to, you know, a few hours to get to a smaller village, or you might take a really local, very small plane that only carries a few people. I have not had the privilege of doing that, but I know that people do that, you know, and so it might be.
Those are exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all about the adventure, you know, and so.
Sometimes it's good exciting, sometimes it's scary exciting, but it's always exciting.
It's always exciting. And so, yeah, you can expect that as well. I know that bus rides are pretty common, so it might take 30 minutes to get to your hotel or where you're going to stay. It might take a few hours to get there. It just depends on where you are in the world. So
what you got to keep in mind is you are on a mission trip to do the work of the Lord along with new and old friends and a little bit of, should I say, suffering? That's not a very good commercial.
Not a great commercial for it.
A little bit of sharing in the Lord's sufferings is good. It's good for you. You will, I will tell you this, you will find joy in it. Even if it is uncomfortable, even if you are tired, you'll enjoy enduring that, just knowing that you're serving the Lord and he's with you and you're with other brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yes, that's a good one to remember. Remember, you're not alone. You have a group of people with you who are believers. They'll take care of you. They are going to try and help you. And yeah, it's good to remember this is not about us. So if we have a complaint, we shouldn't, you know, try not to try to be thankful and grateful.
If you have a problem, do not hesitate to talk to your mobilization strategist, your coordinator, the team leader, because problems just get worse if they go unresolved.
Correct.
The longer they get. But a complaint is different.
Yeah.
If it's an attitude problem, you need to work that out with the Lord.
Yeah.
Or with a good friend that you have with you on the trip. We're all there to help each other, to mentor each other. I know that the veterans that go with us time and time again, they really enjoy helping to encourage and exhort newer people, especially younger people, to come. And they won't fuss at you. They won't, you know, get on your case, but they will help you with your attitude.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, expect the unexpected and also allow yourself to be humbled, because some of those veterans, the people that have been there a long time, I've been with people who are much older than me And sometimes they can have way better attitudes than I can. And I know they're probably way more uncomfortable than I am.
They are, and they're not complaining. And I mean, if you ask them, they'll tell you, yeah, my knees hurt, my back hurts, just in general all the time.
Yes.
Just sitting on this rickety bus with no shocks on this dirt road, this is killing me. But I'm here because I want to be. I'm here because I'm serving the Lord. Yeah.
Yep. So we can take some humility in that. But those are some things you guys can expect from our travel days. And so if you're getting ready, gearing up for a trip, that's kind of what you expect, the unexpected. Yep. Be flexible and, you know, try and enjoy it as best you can.
That's right.
Top five things.
Let's move on to our next segment, which we are both very pumped for, because we're talking about our top five foods from around the world.
Top five foods.
And I think, you know, per usual, we can switch back and forth. And I'm really excited to hear about the foods that you've put down. So why don't you go first? What is your first one?
Okay, I'm going to count these in order ranking up. So I'm going to go 5-1. Okay. All right. These are all really, really, really good. But I was able to rank them up to my
It was favorite. Really hard for me to rank favorites. I just put the top five that I love. And I was thinking about it. If I had the choice to eat any of these on my list today, I don't know what I would choose, because they all sound good.
That would be a challenge. So without further ado, I had ceviche in Peru with one of my translators. And there's ceviche in lots of different parts of Latin America. A lot of people here in Texas are familiar with Mexican style of ceviche. It has it's seafood, and it has been marinated in lime or some other, you know, juices or sauces, and then served with fresh onions and tomatoes. In Peru, it's different. Okay. It is still seafood, usually fresh fish. Maybe also some other seafood. It could be like oysters or even octopus or squid or shrimp, something like that. And it's all fresh, but it is marinated in acidic juices like lime juice, other citrus juices.
Yeah.
Usually has some chilies or chili powder in there, and is served with some other veggies and peppers. And I thought it was phenomenal. I think eating raw fish is something that a lot of people are kind of repulsed by, or they avoid it. They don't like sushi. They don't like anything that's, you know, considered to be raw.
Yeah.
But they have safety standards and things like that, especially in a restaurant. So we went to a restaurant and got ceviche, where I was following the lead of our national. So I trusted her. But also the process that they use to prepare it is supposed to kill off some of the pathogens and parasites and things. So regardless, it was really good and I didn't get sick, so it was all fine.
Nice.
But I do really love fresh fish and I love citrus. So it was just a great combination of all that.
Yeah. So you said ceviche, is that common in South America or just that part of Peru?
I don't know, but I do know that it is Peru's national dish.
Okay,
it's their famous thing. And of course, the region that we went to, Piura up north, they say they have the best in Peru.
Of course.
But
I mean, we can believe it. Why not?
I'm not going to say that isn't true, because it's the only one I had and it was phenomenal. But I'm
going
to tell y'all in love. Everybody says that about their local dish.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. But you were not wrong.
Right. Okay. So I'm just going to go from my 1 to 5 that I originally had.
Okay.
The first one I put, Lanzhou noodles from Lanzhou, China, also called Lanzhou beef noodles. So China was my second mission trip, second time out of the country. It was a very special trip. It was amazing getting to see such different culture. And so we were teaching kind of conversational English in schools in Lanzhou. And Lanzhou is about 4 million people in the total population. And some of the students liked to ask questions, which was really cool. I could tell them a little bit about myself. But all of them would ask, have you tried the Lanzhou noodles? Do you like the beef noodles? Have you had the beef noodles yet? And all the time I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. I have not had beef noodles. But thankfully, one day, one of the teachers took us to a really tiny little restaurant, really pretty close to the school, and we were able to have Lanzhou beef noodles. And what it's most equivalent to, I would consider, you know, close to ramen or something like that. But Lanzhou beef noodles are apparently one of the top 10 noodles in China. And so I looked up some history on all of these. So according to historical records, Lanzhou beef noodles originated in the Tang Dynasty and have a history of more than 1,000 years. But at that time, because of the complex process and materials, it was always the food for the rich. It's said that in Lanzhou, China, they have 3 local treasures. And the saying goes, auspicious gourd and beef noodles and sheepskin raft-like warship. I don't really know what that means, but you know that it's a local treasure because it's in this saying that beef noodles are in this local treasure. So I don't know what the rest of it means, but I thought that was funny. So the Lanzhou beef noodle soup I found is a Chinese Muslim style of beef noodle soup, and it also is known as clear broth or consomme stewed beef noodle. And it attributes it to a Chinese man from Lanzhou named Ma Baozi. And so in the Gansu province, which is where we were, it's usually clear soup. And then one hand-pulled noodle, one noodle throughout the entire dish, one hand-pulled noodle. And I just remember having delicious noodles, really rich broth, very tasty beef, and typically chili oil, lots of seasonings and radishes, which is the typical thing that they put together. But it was so good. It was one of the best soups I've ever had. And I wish that I could have it again. But it was special because it was in this really small restaurant with some of my teammates. And I also remember the bathroom in that place. And so I had a ginormous backpack that I took with me into the bathroom. First of all, the door opened inward into the bathroom, and this bathroom was maybe 1 square foot. It was tiny, and it was a squatty potty too. That was the only thing that was in there. I don't even think there was a sink in there. It was just enough room for the squatty potty and maybe, you know, 6 inches or so on each side, or maybe a foot. I don't know. It was very small. And the floor was pretty dirty and everything. And so I had my backpack on front of me because I thought, okay, this is probably the best way to not fall over. And I remember that very, very well, is how tiny the bathroom was. But man, they know how to do beef noodles. So if you're in China and you get to go to the Gansu province, go to Lanzhou and try the beef noodles because they are pretty famous.
That sounds delicious, just hearing about it. All right, number 4 is borscht in Ukraine.
Borscht.
Now, I've had borscht many times in Ukraine, also outside Ukraine, because I fell in love with it there. I am not a beet fan. I don't usually eat beets, but when I was introduced to borscht in Ukraine, I became a fan of that way to prepare it, at least. And borscht is a beet soup, very traditional beet soup. And sometimes they add other ingredients in there, but they top it off with a sour cream. And you mix that all in, and it's delicious. The best I ever had was in a babushka's kitchen, which sounds probably like the best place to have something like that, a traditional meal like that. The pastor that I was working with that week, it was his mom's house. And man, when we walked into the house, I could smell it already. It was a small little cottage. Walked by the stove, and this was in, I think, November, so it was really cold out. Walking in there by the stove, it was just kind of heavenly. It was really nice to walk in and just kind of be warmed up, and then sit at the table and have some delicious borscht. And I thought I was getting into, because I'd had it before, but I never had it that good. It was incredible. And I don't know if it's because it was just really that good, or if it was because I was so cold.
Yes.
But
nice comfort dish there.
It was served with love, and we couldn't communicate super well, but I remember we just had a good time. She's a believer. You know, sometimes you don't have to say anything, really, just to have a connection and to know that we're all brothers and sisters in Christ. And I felt at home. It was just amazing. So a lot of it is a memory attached to times that I've had borscht and who I was with, but it is pretty good.
Yep. You don't have to speak the same language to communicate that something is delicious.
Yeah. And you know what? Sharing meals together is one of the best ways to bond. No matter your culture, no matter what time you live in, this is the reason that Jesus connected with people over meals.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to do it now.
Yes. And don't be afraid to try new things. You know, if you're a picky person, you're going to have a fun wake-up call going on a overseas trip. But don't be afraid to try new things, because there are some local delicious foods all around the world.
So, and things that you don't think you're going to like. I like almost everything. Mm-hmm. There are things I like less than other things, and beets is one of those. I usually am not. But I wouldn't have known that I loved borscht if I hadn't tried it.
Exactly.
So yeah. I have 5 kids, so this is a topic that comes up at my house all the time.
Just try it.
You don't know if you don't like it if you don't try it.
I know I don't like it. Yeah.
It's good travel advice too.
Yes. So my second one, this was in Santa Cruz, Bolivia, and it's sonso de yuca is what it's called. And sonso de yuca is a traditional Bolivian dish, and especially in Santa Cruz, the region where we were. And so the regions where cassava is highly cultivated, which I don't think I realized cassava and yuca are the same thing. For those of you who don't know what yuca or cassava is, it's very similar to potato. It's a root vegetable, but it's a lot more fibrous. And so it has some fibers in it and everything, but it's pretty similar to potato. But sonso de yuca is a popular street food found in Santa Cruz. And I found this out, since cassava has a sweetish kind of nutty flavor when cooked, sonso de yuca is often referred to as a sweet snack and is usually served with a cup of coffee in the evening, which I did not know that.
Never heard that either.
But sonso de yuca is a mixture of mashed cassava and local cheese, which can be made in 3 different ways. And so it can be fried, baked, or grilled. And so commonly the dough is grilled on a big bamboo skewer over charcoal, and it gives it a nice smoky flavor, which is pretty characteristic of a street food. And it can also be made into casseroles or as patties. But I had it the first way on the bamboo skewer, and it kind of, the shape of it almost looks like a corn dog, but it's a lot bigger. And I was with 2 local church members. They were engaged. They're maybe a few years younger than me. Didn't speak any English. And thankfully, I spoke some Spanish, so that helped us a lot. But they asked us if we wanted to just go on an adventure and see part of Santa Cruz. I'm like, yeah, of course we do. And so they took us to this area. And it was definitely a place where you're just getting street food. It wasn't like street carts or anything, but just kind of open air markets almost. And it kind of enclosed a little bit. And then they had lots of picnic tables and everything. And so it definitely looked like a very local area where you're not going to know it if you're a tourist. Mm-hmm. And so they took us there, and they wanted us to try sonso de yuca because that was, you know, their Bolivian, their Santa Cruz specialty. And so I had it with the charcoal, and it kind of made it a little, had some charcoal marks on it. It was so good. It kind of just reminded me of cheesy mashed potatoes a little bit. That was like the most similar thing it was. But it was so delicious. And it was slightly different because it was made from yuca. Mm-hmm. But oh man, it was so, so good. And the cheese was delicious. And I don't know what kind of cheese it was made from, but it is local cheese. And so, you know, it was good.
Wow.
And I was very thankful. I was talking about it and I really wanted to have it again, but I had no idea how I was going to get it again. But then when we went to the airport, they had a little area where they had, it was like a tiny little casserole dish of sonso de yuca. And I was so excited. I bought 2 of them for myself. I ate one and I got another one because I was like, I have to have it again because I don't know the next time I'm going to have it. And so it was so good.
Now I got to find some.
It's so yummy. Yeah, try and find it if you can. It's good.
I always think it's the absolute best when someone takes you to what their local joint.
Yes.
That tourists don't go to. That's mm-hmm. where I want to go.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. That was the experience of it was good. It also tasted delicious. But it was just fun because they took us and they were excited to show us their local specialty.
That's fun. All right, my third favorite, my third top food that I've had on an international trip is kari kari in the Philippines. Now, I don't know how to describe it other than heaven in a bowl.
Pretty much.
Listen, people, it is, really it's named for the peanut sauce that flavors the soup. So it's usually like a soup or a stew. It can be any kind of meat, different kinds of vegetables, usually kind of whatever's fresh in season, Asian vegetables. And it has this peanut sauce. And it's so good. Very, very addictive. Of course, you know, nutty and hearty and salty and sweet, depending on what's in there. A lot of times they put a sweet potato in there and it's just delicious. So I've had different kinds of it. The first one I ever had was a seafood kari kari. You can probably notice a trend here. Yeah. And that was just incredible. I also had a beef kari kari. So it has beef and the vegetables. It's just really, really amazing.
Nothing and like it in American food.
There's really not. Even at some of the Filipino restaurants I've been to, for some reason, not a lot of them have kari kari. And if they do, it's not like what I had there.
Yeah.
So
it was special.
It was. It was special. And again, that was another time where we went to dinner. I and a few of our other American teammates, this is at the end of the day after we had made visits, went with our local coordinator, Faith. She and her family have worked with IC in the Philippines for over 30 years. They love to get to know us and work with us. And so Faith took us to a restaurant that she likes. And we had just a table full of, you know, several different bowls of different kinds of kari kari and other Filipino dishes. It was a great time of fellowship and delicious, delicious food.
What a blessing. All right. My number three is Monsef from Amman, Jordan.
Yes.
And
I know you love it.
It was so good. And so it was special. It was my husband and I, we were partners for the week, of course. And then JT, our coordinator, and then this local pastor from Jordan took us to a restaurant in Amman. And this is a traditional Jordanian dish. And so I was excited. I wanted to try something I hadn't tried before. You know, I was really excited to try it. And so he said, yeah, you need to try Monsef. It was a flatbread, and then it had turmeric, I think, rice on it, yellow rice, and then lamb was on it. And then it had a side dish of yogurt sauce, and then it had some almonds on it and everything. Then it had a flatbread on top. And so I got it, and the local pastor taught me how to eat it, which I appreciate whenever there's a way to eat something and they teach you how. Because, you know, I like to be the person, you know, I know that I don't look local, but I want to the best of my ability, not act like a foreigner. And so I appreciate when people teach me how to do things. And so you take the flatbread that's on top, you break it off, and you get a little bit of the meat and the rice, and then you dip it into the yogurt sauce and you eat it. And it was so delicious. It was amazing. There was so much food, I couldn't finish it, but it was really cool getting to eat that. And then I learned that Monsef was introduced by Bedouin tribes, which was really cool because that was kind of, they lived a nomadic lifestyle. And so they ate it like that. And so it became a staple in Jordanian culture.
That's
and cuisine,
cool.
But it's really good. It was so delicious.
You know it's good if they've been eating it for thousands of years.
It is good, yeah. And also, there was a lot of cats around there, so that's another way I remember it is because.
What are you implying here?
It wasn't.
Are you sure it was lamb?
It was not cat. It tasted like lamb, but I don't know. You know, there's always those little things that just remind you of a dish, and so that whenever I think of Monsef, I think of the cats that were also accompanying us in our meal.
So I agree. I want to learn the local way to eat whatever it is that we're sharing with someone, because not just so that I can, like Paul said, be all things to all people. I want to experience your culture. I want to blend in as much as I can, even though obviously I'm a foreigner. I want to be respectful of your culture, but also want to learn it.
Right.
And that's just the thing. If you've been eating and sharing and introducing people to this dish for thousands of years, and there's a particular way to eat it, that's probably the right way to eat it.
Yes.
Because you've had thousands, your people have had thousands of years to figure that out. So I want to have the best experience Yes. So please teach me the right way. Don't give me a fork and spoon just because I'm American. No. I want to learn the right way.
Me too.
All right. For me, number two is momos in Nepal. Mm. Momos are big stuffed dumplings, usually steamed, and they will stuff them with all kinds of stuff. But what I've had that was my favorite was chicken or mutton or just vegetables. And they're just so good. I love any dumpling anywhere in the world, prepared any way. But I remember the momos in Nepal just being seasoned just so, so good. And they're just really juicy, just really packed full of the meat or veggies. And just the spices are awesome. And it's all different stuff. I feel like everywhere I had them, they were different.
Nice.
You know, so it's really the family or the chef's own special recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I have had them in the U.S. There's a Nepali restaurant, not super close to the office, but it's kind of nearby in Irving, and it's really, really good. So sometimes you can get pretty close to eating what you had overseas somewhere if there's an immigrant that's come from that part of the world,
mm-hmm.
and is in there sharing their own family recipe. That's right. What was going on here. It's like, there's a guy from Nepal that he and his family own this restaurant, and it's the recipes that they've passed down through their family.
I wonder if they think that it tastes the same here as at home.
You know what? It probably doesn't, because the ingredients themselves are different. And that has a lot to do with the flavor of something, I think.
Or the ingredients will be the same, but it's just...
The quality of them is different.
The quality is different. Yeah, for sure. So,
Either they're not as fresh, or they're processed, or they're just... It's a different species of plant or meat, and it's just... It might be different.
Yep. So my number four is mofongo from Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. Have you heard of mofongo before?
I have not.
Okay. So I was in Puerto Rico for 9 weeks. And I think it was the first or second night I was there. We went to a restaurant, and Eat the Mata was one of my partners. And she is from Puerto Rico. And she told me, you know, mofongo is really good. And there's another guy who is a leader, and he said, yes, mofongo is really good. And so I was like, all right, I need to try mofongo. It's typically made with plantains as its main ingredient, or yuca. And I think I had it both ways. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure I had it with yuca once and with plantains once. But plantains are the main way that it's cooked. But it's picked green, and so it's cut into pieces and typically fried or boiled or roasted, and then mashed with salt and garlic and broth and olive oil. And then it's made into a really tight ball. And that's how it's served, is in this tight ball. And it usually has some meat with it, so pork or bacon or something like that. And it's so delicious. But I remember it being so garlicky. Not too garlicky, but it's very, very garlicky. And it doesn't matter who you are. Mofongo will give you horrible bad breath. First of all, it makes you burp. I don't know why, but it can clear a room because of how bad it is. And I, like, from personal experience, I remember I ate mofongo, and then we went to get ice cream, and I burped, and then it's just like, oh my god. Yeah, it was really bad. And so mofongo is delicious, but beware that the garlic will get you. But it's so delicious, and it's a Puerto Rican specialty. And there was a running joke that we had that Ethamar told me. She said, if you lose your phone, people joke and they say, where did mofongo? Yeah, I still say that every once in a while.
But I've got three thoughts on that. One is, it sounds like an African dish. Like, it sounds like a Swahili word.
It has some African roots, or like I read that they kind of encouraged each other, or there was some influence between African and Puerto Rican dishes with this specific dish.
All right. I can see that, because my next thought was, I've had fried plantain dishes from different parts of the Caribbean, and a lot of times that comes from African influence. So in Haiti in particular, it's a staple And there's, you know, a lot of West African influence there. And in Jamaica, I've had them from Jamaica as well. So maybe there's something to that, that it's a cultural blend.
I think it is. But also, fried plantains are so good. I thought of that as well on top five foods. I just love fried plantains in general. They're so good.
Me too. If you do them right. Otherwise, they're just dry and starchy and, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you do it right, they're good. They're sweet, delicious. Mm-hmm. My third thought was, it sounds like a great way to keep mosquitoes away.
Good way to keep mosquitoes away. Good way to keep people away. So good way to keep anything away.
I don't want either of them biting me. So
I don't either.
Lots of garlic. Vampires too. You know,
vampires. Yeah, keep the vampires away. I don't know.
I'm usually not worried about that, but
not usually.
You can't be too careful.
All right, what's your number one?
My number one is Korean bibimbap.
Bibimbap? That's a fun word.
I've never had a bad bowl of bibimbap. Say that five times fast.
That sounds fun.
The funny thing is, the first time I had it, and the best I've ever had, was in Mongolia, not Korea.
Oh, interesting.
There's a Korean restaurant in Ulaanbaatar that was near the place where we were staying, where our team was staying on an IC trip, and they had a Korean restaurant. That one day, after visits, everybody came back. Actually, it might have been after the opening rally. We had a lot of time one afternoon for some reason. And the team members that were staying at the hotel wanted to go out for lunch or dinner. I don't remember which. We were jet lagged anyway. It doesn't matter. Could have been any time. We were hungry. And a few of us decided to go and try this Korean restaurant, because we knew we liked Korean food and like, well, this will be fun.
Why not?
And it was amazing. And so bibimbap is another bowl of random ingredients. It can be anything. I guess it traditionally was developed because like a gumbo. You need to use all the ingredients that you have left over in your kitchen, right? And mixing them all together. But its signature flavor is the chili paste that they put in. Now, you might be familiar with it, you know, at all. A lot of restaurants will have the chili paste. You put it in. It's kind of like sriracha.
Okay.
And I like to put a lot in there. But it can be, you know, the veggies can be like, you know, bean sprouts, sauteed vegetables, carrots, whatever. And maybe mushroom and some meat. I mean, you mix it all up and put a bunch of chili paste in there.
Nice.
And it's delicious. Now, we put initially, I remember that Gary Godkin and I, Gary is another one of our mobilization strategists, and he's been working with IC as he's a stratologist, which means he is good at recruiting, training, and coordinating mission teams and also riding horses because he's a stratologist. I don't know if that's true. Gary probably is. He's a Texas boy, so.
He is.
I don't know. Anyhow, Gary is one of our mobilization strategists. And he loves Korean food. And so whenever he's in town at the office, we usually go get Korean food. But this was a different experience because we were in Asia and we thought this is going to be extra good. And it really was. It burned us up. Like I'm talking, I mean, we were, man, stomachs upset, sweating, lips just burning. And we went back the next day. And then we went back a third time because was that good.
Yeah. I've had places like that in China. I went to a restaurant three times, which I love China because of the lazy Susans, you know, that they put the food on and then they move it around. There's some places where you go and it's phenomenal that you have to go back. So great.
And worth the spice too.
Yeah.
Worth the spice, worth the price, which the price was not much. That was a great part of it.
Have you been to Korea?
No. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with Korean food. I've had Korean friends that introduced me to it, but
there's foods that I love and I've never been to the country where it originates.
Yeah.
Okay, so my fifth one is Peking duck. Have you had
Yes. Peking
duck? It's so good.
But I did not in Beijing.
I did not have it in Beijing. I had it in Xi'an, China. But we're with a family. Peking duck is so good. And it's been prepared since the imperial era. So it's been around for a long time. But it's characterized by thin and crispy skin. And usually it's served and cut right in front of you. And oh my gosh, I love duck. It's so good. And I remember it being served with a special sauce and also with Pop Rocks. I don't know why. I think it's an Asian thing to like have the different textures, but there were Pop Rocks. And it was a pretty fancy restaurant, so I was pretty shocked to see
that's funny.
But a little thing of Pop Rocks, and so you can dip your duck into the sauce and then dip it into the Pop Rocks and eat it. So it was just quite a sensation in your mouth. It was wild, but I remember we were eating with a family, and there was a little six-year-old girl there, and she just kept eating the Pop Rocks. But taking duck, it was so delicious. I would love to have it again at this particular place. It was so good.
I need to immediately ask a Chinese person if they've ever had duck with Pop Rocks.
I tried to look it up, but Google was no help to me. I looked up Peking duck with Pop Rocks. It did not know what I was talking about. So I don't know. Maybe it was this one restaurant.
Maybe it was. That's genius. I think. I haven't had it that way, but it sounds fun.
It was fun.
All right. Well, those all sound really amazing. I'm hungry now.
Me too. I'm too.
I also asked some of our coworkers around the office what their favorites were. And so I can tell you about some of those. And I got a clip from JT as well.
Oh, fun.
Mark, our president, our boss, said he had some delicious soup in Bolivia that he cannot identify.
Soup in Bolivia.
We've named several soups and they were really good. So I believe him. It must have been really awesome.
Yes.
He also really enjoyed ice cream that he had in Brazil. They got it multiple times, and he likes it best with acai berry, like sprinkled on top. That sounds incredible.
That does sound good.
I told him that's a great way to redeem your ice cream into a health food.
It is a superfood.
So,
very good for you.
That's how you make ice cream really good for you.
Amen.
Dawn enjoyed some fresh fish pulled right out of the ocean in Belize.
Ooh.
Which, obviously, like I like seafood, but you can't beat it when it's
right.
really, really fresh like that.
Fresh out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And Dawn also loves empanadas from anywhere, and so do I.
Me too. Me too, Dawn.
I'm not sure how you can go wrong with them. I even had some empanadas at the airport in Miami, where I have spent much of my life, for better or worse, at the airport in Miami. It's my second home. And those were really good.
Yeah. I've had some good empanadas in Puerto Rico. It was so delicious. I remember it was a very particular place. We were at the beach and they had lots of different empanada flavors. But oh man, empanadas are, it's hard to beat them.
I like them with potatoes. I like them with veggies. I like them with meat in there.
And cheese.
Cheese for sure. So good. Yeah. And I've got a clip from JT. We tell a lot of stories about.
We both
travel with JT. I've traveled with him a lot. He's a unique individual.
You're
always going to have fun with JT.
You're always going to have stories to tell if you're
and
with JT.
That's true. That's true. Lots of adventures with him. Let me see if I can get this clip up here.
So Stalenka Buliga's wife made me donuts with cream that was milked from a cow on a visit an hour before we ate. That's number one. Stalenka, Sam's brother, called like 15 minutes before we got home and said, we're almost there. We got there. She had dinner ready. We ate dinner. While we ate dinner, she took the milk from a cow that was milked during the visit, made cream and mixed it with a blueberry compote, fried donuts. And we had donuts fried with fresh cream like an hour ago. Is it still inside a cow and blueberries? So that was number one. Elias tricked me into eating some kind of beef heart in Peru, and it was really, really good. He said, this is special. This is just for visitors. And then about halfway through, he said, do you like the beef heart? And yeah, I did. I did like the beef heart, so that was good. Let's see. The very first trip I ever went on was Brazil in 2006. We got off the plane. We went to the hotel. We checked in. We got back on the bus, and we went to a Brazilian steakhouse, and I almost died that night from meat sweats, but it was the best. The best meal that I'd ever eaten that day. And I've of course been in love with Brazil ever since then. I think that's it. I think the top three, beef hearts, Brazilian steakhouse, and fresh fried donuts with blueberry compote and cream.
Pretty amazing.
That fresh, oh man, right out of the cow. That sounds so good. That is, yeah, I can't get fresher than that.
I think the best things I've ever had were when they were the freshest.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I also asked a few people. So I asked Jody, and Jody and her husband Jeff have been to Asia countless times, so many times. And I asked her what her favorite foods were. She said chicken fried rice. She didn't say from where, but she just said chicken fried rice, grilled bananas, and pomelo. Have you ever had pomelo?
I'm not sure. What is it?
It is a fruit, and it's in the grapefruit family. And so I have had it. It's very interesting, huge fruit. But yeah, so pomelo, she loves that.
See, sometimes I don't know if I've had something because I don't know what it was called.
Yeah, that's an issue I've had too. And then Chantel, she said, don't laugh, but she said pizza in Cambodia. She said it was the best pizza she'd ever had, and she ate it every night for dinner, which I thought was very funny.
You can find pizza anywhere in the world, just about.
Yes, I've had pizza in Thailand, and it was delicious. There's a lot of places where you can find pizza.
When I was talking to Dawn, she did say that one of the worst things she's ever had was pizza, sadly.
Really?
That was in South America somewhere. I don't remember what she said, Paraguay maybe. Just because they had weird stuff on it, weird to us,
right.
Things on it. So, and I've experienced that too. And throughout South America, I've had the weirdest pizza. Some of it's really good. Some of it's to my palate, kind of strange. But
yes. Okay, so I'm curious. Do you have any runners up?
Let me look at my notes. I did have some runners up. Street tacos in Acuna, Mexico.
I also had tacos on one of mine.
I've had a lot of really good tacos, but in Mexico, though, look, you can't beat that. And this is another situation where it was a local person that prepared them for our team. So this was after a week of ministry, and we sat down with our hosting church, and one of the ladies at the church had made these taco kits and just brought all the ingredients, and you put on your asada, or I think the other option was maybe chicken or something else, and your cilantro, you've chopped onions, and this mystery red sauce. I don't know exactly what it was. I've had similar sauces, but nothing quite like it. And it was so, so good. Also really hot.
Yeah, but I bet. One of my dreams is to be able to go somewhere and, a little local grandmother teaches me how to cook a local dish. I want to do that so badly. Everywhere I've gone, they're like, no, you don't come in here. I will cook. And I'm like, please teach me. I want to know. It's special to learn. But yeah, I think it's just their hospitable culture. They're like, no, you stay. I'm going to serve you. But man, there's times when I'm like, the to make this more special would be for you.
Yeah, let me cook kitchen. With you.
Let me see how you do it. Let me do it with you. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. One of mine was also tacos from this little restaurant in Puerto Rico called El Cantinflas. And I think it was flour tortillas, but it had mashed potatoes on it. And then pork or, another kind of meat. And then a special sauce. I don't know why these tacos were so phenomenal, but with the mashed potatoes and the pork in it, it was so good. And we got those quite a few times. It was close to where we were staying, and so we'd go there every once in a while. Some of the best tacos I've ever had. They were so good. And the sauce that you put on it was delicious, but something about the mashed potatoes in it made it really, really good. So that was one of them.
It is a secret to goodness. Some mashed potatoes, yeah. Apparently.
I know.
I'll say German food in general.
Yeah.
I'm keen on. Yeah. But I have a bias.
Yeah.
But it's good. Rice and dal in Nepal is really, really good. It's a staple. So most homes we went to, if they fed us, we had rice and dal. It's like the lentil soup sauce stuff you pour all on the rice. You eat it with your hands. And it's just good. It's hearty. It's energizing. Just feels healthy, and it is just tastes really good.
Rice and dal in Nepal.
Rice and dal in Nepal.
Yeah, I've had some really good foods from some families here in the United States, meeting some Afghan families. And so they've made us really, really good foods before. There's a food, I can't even remember what it's called.
Is it Osh?
No, it's not Osh, but it is similar to, if you know what an El Salvadorian pupusa is, and so it's flour, and then it's basically like a, almost like a quesadilla, but it's enclosed, and it had cheese and I think chicken in it. Oh my gosh, it was so good. But some other ones, I went to Little Italy in New York City and got some like five cheese gnocchi. Fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
We went to this restaurant twice because it was so, so good. And then when we went to Destin, Florida on our IC trip, we went to a Filipino restaurant, which is how I had curry curry. I've not been to the Philippines, but curry curry was fantastic just in this place. And then we had lumpia as well. Again, fantastic.
They were from the Philippines. I remember that, talking to the owners. It was a family-run place. Yeah. That was legitimate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then close to our last day, we were working with Brazilian churches, and they made us.
They threw
us a churrasco, which is a Brazilian barbecue. And they made us some amazing meats and steaks, and they prepared it perfectly. And there's a steak cut. It's called picanha, and it is seriously the best steak you'll ever.
That reminds me of asado in Argentina. That's one of their national dishes. What they're really known for is their asado steak. And they just grill it everywhere. So it's home grilled steak. The grill is shaped a certain way, and it's, you know, the fire is built up in a certain way, so it's got to be, you know, at a certain temperature, very, very specific way, and I'm sure it's certain cuts too. They're all, you know, thick cuts, and it's just, it's barbecued steak, and that was,
can't go wrong,
so good.
Yeah,
so those are my runners
up. Yeah, I'm now so hungry. It's also close to lunchtime, and I wish I could just magically poof some of these foods in front of me and eat them.
Yeah. I'll tell you, but if you live, especially in a bigger city or close to a metro area, you can find lots of international restaurants, and so you should be adventurous to go try things. But the best way to try things is to just go with us. Just go with us on a trip, right? Because you're not going to be some grandma's kitchen. You're not going to be a hole in the wall family run restaurant. You're not going to be a bazaar where you just go and have street food or share a meal at somebody's house. It doesn't get better than that. So you just got to come with us.
Yep. Get in on the action and come experience truly delicious food prepared by truly amazing people.
Yep.
But let's move on to our last segment and end with a testimony from our partners around the world.
It's story time.
So, Bucky, where does this end-to-end take place?
This one takes place in Myanmar.
Cool.
More commonly known as Burma. And it is a place in Southeast Asia with a very storied history. In recent time, they've been undergoing a coup and civil war that is very, very deadly, very treacherous. But there's light in the middle of it because of Christ. And this is one such story. This is from a national to national project this year there from January. According to new military government law in January of 2024, men aged 18 to 35 and women 18 to 27 can be drafted into the armed forces for 2 years. When we shared the gospel in this region, well, name the region, we saw many parents who were facing hopeless situations because some of their sons are leaving their families. This time is the darkest time in our country. Many parents are scared about the situation and they cry. When we shared the good news to them, they easily accepted it. It is a great privilege for us to share the gospel because we see that it truly comforted them by the Holy Spirit. This partnership had 25 participants from 15 churches there in Myanmar. They shared the gospel with 1,400 people. It was pretty phenomenal considering everything that's going on and the heavy persecution there. 1,150 accepted Christ.
And
Praise God. And I love this because, of course, I always love this when the gospel is presented, especially when it is boldly presented by persecuted Christians who just go anyway. They have nothing to lose. To live is Christ. To die is gain. And so they spend their life going and sharing the gospel with as many as they can. And I love seeing salvations in the midst of war like this, because it just shows you that Christ is victorious. Yes. Our battle is not against flesh and blood, and Christ mm-hmm. is victorious. But also because listening to our partners saying that these people were comforted by the gospel through the Holy Spirit in the midst of their loss and their fear, mm-hmm. that's just...
There's no hope like Jesus.
There is none. There's no hope besides Jesus. And so that's just such a sweet thing to see, the only source of hope, bringing people hope and comfort, because the Holy Spirit is a comforter.
Yes. Yeah. These Intuins, although they take place without partnering teams from America coming, you all can still be actively involved in this work. I mean, you see that there's Intuins happening while there's war going on in these other countries. But one way that you can partner with us in these national partnerships is through prayer, of course, but also through giving. And so you can check out our website and give, and you can fund an entire national-to-national partnership, yeah. which is really amazing. And so you can visit our website at internationalcommission.org/intuin. And some of these Intuins are only a few $100 to totally fund. And so reach out to us if you have any questions. But we're telling you, these Intuins have huge impacts because they're doing exactly what we do on international trips, which is they're praying for the lost, and then they're going to the people that they're praying for and sharing the gospel with them and inviting them to know Jesus. And so we've been just hearing amazing stories of how the Lord is working in really miraculous ways all over the globe. And so if you want to be involved, we invite you to be involved with what the Lord is doing around the world.
There's really not a better kingdom investment. Dollars to results. There's nothing like sponsoring an end-to-end partnership, because mm-hmm. nationals can do this strategic evangelism, training, discipleship, outreach, even pioneering places where we can't go mm-hmm. as Westerners. And they can do it for much, much cheaper. Because, look, Americans are expensive. It costs a lot to get us to a place, but also we just have higher expectations for lodging and food and transportation and stuff. Right. When we go with our teams, many of us are willing to and want to just do what they do, be with them, full mm-hmm. partnership, but they want to honor us. Most of these people are from very hospitable cultures, and they want to put us in the best place with the best food and transportation, so they do, and they kind of insist on it. So all that to say, it's very expensive for us to go. And most of these end-to-end partnerships cost the same as sending one American on an international trip. So both are very beneficial, but this is just a highly effective way, financially mm-hmm. and also access-wise. These people also don't have to learn the culture. They already know it. They don't have to learn the language. They don't have to learn the customs. They can go to their people in their own culture or a nearby culture and be able to relate to them in ways that we can't. It's just a highly, highly effective way to be a part of sharing the gospel and expanding the kingdom places where we can't reach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, that is all for today. Thanks for listening in. If you want to learn more about our work at International Commission, head over to our website, internationalcommission.org. There you can see job postings. You can learn how you can pray strategically, join our prayer team, how to give, and how to go with us. Also, if you like this podcast, please like, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a rating, share it with your friends so that we can get the message about what we do to more and more people, so we can increase the labors to the harvest that we take to the field. Let's equip and enable each other until everyone has a chance to hear the good news of Jesus. Until next time.